Good afternoon. On January 15, 2016, the CDC issued a health advisory to healthcare providers and public health practitioners regarding the need to be alert to the diagnosis of Zika virus infection due to the risk of imported cases from the unprecedented escalating epidemic in Central and South America, in particular, concern for adverse pregnancy outcomes. Shortly thereafter, our county health department received a call from a local healthcare provider with the question, "I think I have a patient with sexually transmitted Zika infection. Does he meet testing criteria?" This patient, whom we'll call patient B, was being seen by his physician on his fifth day of acute illness, with symptoms including fever, pruritic rash, small joint arthritis, and marked conjunctivitis. Patient B's sexual partner, patient A, had similar illness 1 week earlier with fever, rash, and conjunctivitis 2 days after he had returned to the U.S. from Venezuela. Patient B had not traveled outside the U.S. recently and had never heard of Zika infection. The provider already collected serum from patient B prior to calling our health department. We advised that patient A also be tested for Zika. At this appointment, his first visit to his provider since his illness, patient A mentioned that he had many mosquito bites while in Venezuela and that others in the locale had similar illnesses. At the time of our case illness, there had been only 2 published reports indicating any potential sexual transmission of Zika infection. 1 report of an instance of probable sexual transmission from a man to a woman, and 1 case report of a man with replication-competent Zika virus that was isolated from his semen at 2 weeks and up to 10 weeks after illness onset. PCR for Zika from serum of both patients was negative, including the specimen obtained 4 days after illness onset in patient B. Serologic testing, however, yielded positive IgM results for both Zika and dengue virus from both patients. While awaiting for results of PRNT testing, additional public health investigation was initiated. Fortunately, the winter timing of these cases immediately rendered the possibility of local vector-borne transmission to be extremely unlikely. Although Dallas is within geographic range of Zika virus mosquito vectors, area winter temperatures at the time were less than 12 degrees Celsius, which is not permissive for Aedes mosquito activity. Also, even if these mosquitoes had been present, the time from exposure to illness in patient B was shorter than the minimum time required for Aedes to become infectious if the mosquito had ingested a Zika-infected blood meal. Despite the extreme unlikelihood of local vector-borne transmission, to prove the point, county vector control staff placed BG Sentinel and Gravin mosquito traps around the residential areas of patients A and B. These results yielded only a few Culex mosquitoes and no Aedes mosquitoes. Detailed secondary interviews of the patients would be necessary, and we had already been hearing that our patients were intensely private. Because of the anticipated sensitivity of those interviews, we took several steps to prepare and to better ensure the effectiveness of those interviews. Rather than cold calling these patients, we requested the provider to inform the patients of their preliminary test results, to explain to them that our health department would be contacting them for detailed interviews, and to explain the public health importance of their participation. We also consulted with the CDC in sexually transmitted infections, and we found that, we are particularly grateful here for John Brooks to quickly review the most salient details which would need to be covered in the interviews. Finally, we selected the most experienced STI interviewer from our group to conduct these interviews, which in our case was an infectious disease physician. Patient A had traveled regularly to Central and South America for many years. He had no known prior arboviral infections and no prior vaccinations for yellow fever or Japanese encephalitis. He had never had any major medical illnesses or sexually transmitted infections. He and patient B had been mutually monogamous for more than 10 years. Both 1 day before and 1 day after onset of acute symptoms, patient A reported having condomless insertive anal sex with patient B. No prostatitis, hematospermia, ulcerative anal, or genital lesions were reported. Patients A and B were interviewed separately. Patient B's recollection of sexual activity 6 and 8 days prior to his illness onset was congruent with patient A's. He had no known prior arboviral infections or arboviral vaccinations and had no major medical illnesses or history of sexually transmitted infections. He also reported no ulcerative anal or genital lesions prior to his illness and no hematospermia or prostatitis following his illness onset. At the conclusion of the secondary interviews, the rationale for semen, saliva, and urine samples were explained to the patients. We delivered the specimen containers for semen directly to the patient so collection could occur at home, and we coordinated with the provider's clinic for collection of urine and saliva samples. Subsequently, the PRNT results from the initial serum specimens returned. Patient A's PRNT titers were greater than 20,000 for Zika and dengue serotype 1, indicating that patient A had been infected with Zika virus, dengue, or both. Patient B's PRNT titers indicated he had been infected only with Zika. These test results, in conjunction with the epilinkage between these two cases, supported that sexual transmission of Zika virus had occurred. The announcement on February 2nd of our case of sexual transmission of Zika generated a great deal of media attention globally, as you can see on the slide. The particular scrutiny conferred to those who have the distinction of being first as, or has been referred to as, that bright, shining light of judgment. Our health agencies needed to balance in duty to inform the public of information with important public health ramifications. With the need to protect the privacy of our patients who had chosen to comply with our public health investigation because they themselves understood the implications of sexual transmission for pregnant women. Decisions were therefore made to release the minimum of any identifying descriptors associated with our patients and to fully focus messaging instead of the quote-unquote moral of the story, which was the public health messages to prevent any sexual transmission, particularly to those at highest risk of adverse outcomes, pregnant women. These prevention messages, as from the early release of MMWR on February 5th, included that men who reside in or have traveled to an area of active Zika virus transmission and who have a pregnant partner should abstain from sexual activity or consistently and correctly use condoms during sex for the duration of pregnancy. The prevention messages, all PCR testing of urine, saliva, and semen specimens from both patient A and B were negative, but had been obtained at 24 and 17 days post-onset of illnesses, respectively. Our laboratory split all samples prior to shipping specimens to CDC, so they were also able to test these samples after we acquired PCR and IgM capacity. Since January 2016, there have been at least 12 additional case reports of male-to-female sexually transmitted Zika infection that have been reported in published literature involving vaginal and oral sex. Sexual transmission from an asymptomatic male traveler has also been reported. Zika virus RNA has been found to be detectable in semen for up to 62 days after illness onset. Studies of seminal persistence of infection-competent Zika remain ongoing. To date, in the U.S., have been a total of 11 sexually transmitted cases of Zika infection reported. Our cases underscore the importance of clinician awareness of the need to consider Zika diagnoses, not only for identification of imported travel-associated Zika infections, but also for detection of locally transmitted cases, whether by sexual transmission or mosquito. Providers should continue to be aware of the possibility of sexual transmission. Reports of sexual transmission identified in areas where local transmission is not occurring offer important opportunities to further characterize this mode of transmission. The accessibility and proximity of our local public health lab was important to ensure logistical success of specimen handling and helping to pick up samples and complete the necessary processing, packing, and shipping procedures, which are too complex for typical private clinician offices. Finally, our experience reinforced the need to retain flexibility in epidemiologic criteria for Zika testing in order to be able to detect potential cases of local transmission. Thank you.